Sometimes I think, just for who the Buddha was, because sometimes I think we see him, treat him like, almost like the way we would hold Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus Christ is this part God, part human idea. You know, this virgin birth, and there's a uniqueness about Jesus that makes him different than we are. And I don't think Buddha as a being is to be held in the same way. So if Buddha is a special being, like a virgin birth, then your attempts at awakening would be impossible because you were born of a mother. Right? So you're already outside of the capacity to awaken. But it's not the case. So the same kinds of understanding of the mind that the Buddha had is because he had a mind just like yours and mine. So because he had a mind just like ours, then you can understand what he saw was the process to unhook that mind. And he's a teacher, not so much a god. There's a saying Tibetans say, let me see if I can pull it up right quick. This is a good way to begin to sense into what we're going to focus on here this go around. Let's see if I can find it. Here. They say Buddhas do not wash away sins with water. So they can't wash away any harm or difficulties we've done. Nor do they remove the sufferings of beings with their hands. So they can't change any of our circumstances. And knowing Buddha and practicing his teachings, yeah, that is it. So neither do they transplant their own realizations into others. So they cannot help us realize our own awakening. It's the teaching, the truth of suchness, they liberate. It's the teachings, the truth of suchness that liberate beings. So it's really in the applications of the teachings that the Buddha saw that liberation happens. It's not in the knowing Dhamma. It's not in the knowing the knowledge of Dhamma. It's in the application and the wisdom, the realization of Dhamma that we are liberated. So the second kind of part that we're going to look at is who the Buddha was when he awakened. And so just a backstory, in case you didn't know, the Buddha himself, he was raised in money. So he was raised in what he called refinement. He said that he lived in refinement. Everything was refined for his benefit. I think that this refinement came about because his father and his mother at the time when she was pregnant was told that he was either going to be a great king or he was going to be a great sage. He was going to save people one way or the other. Well, his father did not want him to be like a religious sage. They don't have nothing. He wanted him to be a great king. And so he created the world he thought would entice the Buddha into being a great king. So all of his world was refined. And everything about the way he lived was designed to help him really enjoy this life of refinement. And the more he could enjoy it, the better he would want to stay with it and be live in this way. But at some point when the Buddha got older, in his 20s, this refinement lost its luster. That's really what happened to him. He sort of got the realization that no matter how refined the world was, he was not going to be happy when it came time to die. He was going to be like everybody else. He was afraid of death, he was afraid of old age, and he was afraid of sickness, just like everyone else. And that he had this realization that a run-of-the-mill person such as him gets disgusted, humiliated, freaks out at the idea of death or old age or sickness. So it didn't matter how his refinement was, he was going to inevitably have to face the very thing that none of us ever want to face. We all want to always remain in this youthful way, in this healthy way, and we don't want to accept that we're going to die. And so he decided, it really came on an evening kind of party. There's a sutta where he was talking about having a party with a whole bunch of friends were over, and everybody was so beautiful, and everybody looked great, and everything looked just sparkly, shiny. And then he woke up late at night when people were now drunk, slobbering, sleep. They didn't look so beautiful. Everything was old and raggedy, kind of run down. It had lost its luster. And when he saw this lost luster, he realized in some kind of understanding, I cannot just go through life like this. I cannot just yet again get past this party, have another party, have another party, and keep going the same way. Something about this world, there has to be something more about this world than just this. And so he snuck out. He was married, had a wife, had just had a baby named Rahula, and he snuck out and left. And he got rid of his royal clothing, cut all his hair off, and he went first to a teacher who was renowned in the area, who knew how to get into great jhana states, great blissful, peaceful states. And the Buddha could do this without any problem. So let's call him Siddhartha. That was his name. So Siddhartha, as a regular person, could get into these blissful states without any effort. And he could stay in the states for a great duration of time. But, you know, at some point he's going to get hungry. The body's going to have to eat. He's going to have to pee. There's all kinds of stuff that's going to happen. No matter how blissful the state, he had to come out of it. And he had to take care of regular life. And in that process of constantly coming out, he began to lose his luster around the blissful states, because they too were limited. And he said he had to go, and the teacher begged him to stay, offered him all kinds of money, and if you stay, we'll get students far and wide. Everybody's going to come and want to learn from Siddhartha. He's like, yeah, I can't do it. Because if I stayed, I would have to give up on this understanding of what is the point of all the suffering. And so he left. And he joined with a group of five other practitioners. They're called the Jains. They practice Jainism. And it is a aesthetic practice. Ascetic practice. And so he did a lot of the opposite, very painful to the body, very you don't give in to suffering. The body just has to lie on roots of trees and deal with the elements of heat and rain, and you're just not giving it nothing. He said at one point he was so thin that he could push his finger through his belly button and touch his back spine. It was just skin and bones. And I'm sure with all this effort, he was known to be able to endure one grain of rice a day. That's what he said. And even with all that, he ain't going nowhere. He's just dying. I mean, he's dealing with all the suffering. He's doing all this practice, and now he's just dying. And that's just it. And he's no closer to understanding the nature of suffering. And so one moment, he had this vision of when he was a kid, to put it in context. So we all kind of hear the story about him having this vision of when he was a kid, and his father, there was some kind of festival going on, and there's all kinds of laughing and playing and harvesting going on, and he is sitting there as a kid in deep samadhi, still. Noise, sound, everything, and he's still. And in that moment, he had this thought, might there be another way? Maybe there's another way that doesn't involve going to these blissful states, that doesn't involve beating the living daylights out of the body, but there's a middle way, a something else that is wrapped in stillness, and yet it is not it's not removed from life. And so he figured he was going to have to get his strength back if he was going to investigate his new way. And so he took some food, and when he took some food, that is when his friends left him. They thought he had given up, and so they all went on their own and left him in the practice. So here he is, and said all that to get to a moment of where this sutta is that I want to talk about, that we're going to practice with this afternoon. He's sitting here in his practice, and he began to divide his thoughts into two categories. He called them two thoughts. One thought, he noticed, were thoughts that were swimming around, ill will, aversion, you know, there are harmful thoughts, and thoughts that were self-indulgent. They were just indulging the moment. And then he had another set of thoughts that were kinder, that were not harmful to anybody, and that they were shrouded in restraint. So one thought, he called those thoughts that were shrouded in restraint, that were kinder, softer, wholesome. And he called the other thoughts unwholesome. And what makes this important is, first, that you really get that the Buddha was sitting there thinking. He was sitting there just like you, thinking. And the second thing is, he had unwholesome thoughts. He was thinking about resentment. I bet he was pissed off at his friends for leaving him. He probably got a lot of regret about leaving all that money, all that peacefulness, and he's sitting out here by himself, not really sure that what he's doing even matters to anybody. What the point? So he's got all this kind of loneliness, sadness. Here's the same thoughts that we have. He's in the same kind of place that we are in. He is not sitting there on some kind of golden throne feeling all peace and goodness. There is a something happening here that he is beginning to notice. And this is the second sort of step that we're going to look at. It's not just being in the present moment, but there's a second step of noticing whether or not the thoughts that you're having are in one category or the other. So instead of him sitting there judging himself because he had thoughts, I'd say, of resentment, his mom died when he was like a week old, So if anyone knows anyone whose parent died when they were young, that's a hard role to live. There's so much abandonment issues, stuff that we miss, same psychological things we have. I'm sure he had it too. So there's these kinds of thoughts that are in this category that are stressful on the mind. And he's noticing and categorizing those thoughts. And he's noticing these more easeful thoughts, categorizing those thoughts. What he's not doing is lost in the thoughts. He was not just randomly thinking. He was sitting sort of aback with this peripheral view, kind of noticing and categorizing these thoughts. It wasn't so much he's judging the thoughts as much as he's beginning to discern what thoughts are like. And he began to notice that if he thought excessively on the unwholesome thoughts, it would lead to more difficulty. So the more he thought about resentment, the more resentment he had, the more stuck he got in his practice. The more he allowed himself to just daydream, the more he just daydreamed, and the more stuck he got. He would be further away from his path of wanting to understand the nature of suffering and be free of it. But when he had his thoughts that were based in restraint, and our restraint is going to be this idea of finding an anchor and staying with it. So there's a restraint there, that there's a level of kindness and softening, and that it's non-harm. So it's sort of like you notice the harmful thoughts and you let those go, this restraint. When he dwelled on those, he noticed there's more ease. Feels like I'm moving on the path. There's more forward movement. And he also noted that if he dwelled too much on the thinking itself, his mind would get tired and he would find himself back over here in the space of these unwholesome thoughts. So when we're noticing thinking, we're beginning to categorize them and notice something. The second thing that we're going to practice with this afternoon, this second part, is to begin to see what happens to us when we dwell on unpleasant thoughts, when we dwell on what would be considered the unwholesome. So your thoughts may be just fantasy. It could just be planning. I got something I got to take care of, and I'm just planning this thing out to see if you can notice what it does to you. It takes you away from the path, and you don't feel like you're on the path anymore. You're going this way, heading south, but you're not heading north anymore. And you can tell that. You can sense that for yourself, not someone telling you that, oh, these thoughts are going to lead to more suffering. You can sense it. You come and there's this kind of paying attention to where your thoughts are and trying to focus more on the felt sense of the anchor, getting less caught in all the thoughts, just kind of letting them go. Now you're going to feel like, I feel like I'm coming into this present moment. And this is what we're going to practice with this afternoon, this kind of noticing when we are getting caught in the thoughts. And when we notice that there's a thought, before we just let it go and turn, to get a sense of where was I? What does this feel like now that I'm awake and I can see? How far am I away from where I was? Do I even feel like I'm a far away? And having a sense of this. And then we'll, as we go through the afternoon first to feel it, then we'll begin to tie in towards the end how this relates to intention. But first we have to begin to feel the quality of these two thoughts. Now the last thing is, you don't actually have to generate unwholesome thoughts. Generate wholesome thoughts. They're already there. It's very easy. They're a very natural part of who we are. And so this is less about trying to make something arise and more about relaxing to a point where you can just be aware of these thoughts and the process. And in that awareness is when we're going to start learning to see and feel into what's actually going on. All right? So it's just a little bit of a little process that we're going to unfold gradually. So again, we're going to practice for an hour and a half. We're going to practice in this hour and a half with this sense of when we come into the room, our vow, our promise is that we're letting go of the thoughts and we're anchoring our attention on an anchor. Does everybody have an anchor that they feel comfortable with? Right? So the anchor, now what about online? Everybody have an anchor? Anybody not feel like they're not comfortable with their anchor? Okay, so one more thing about the anchor, just to make sure you're feeling comfortable with it. If when you come into the room and you find that you have to, that you keep getting lost in thought, meaning, not that you even know you're thinking, but you're going along, and then you're like, oh my God, I'm thinking again. And so then you let go of the thinking, and you come back to the anchor. And you're going along. Oh my God, I'm thinking again. Okay, you gotta let go of the... So you don't even notice that you're leaving the anchor. That anchor is probably too subtle. And that's why you keep leaving it, because you can't tell that you've left it. And many people, they think the anchor should be the breath. It's got to be the breath, because I can, everybody uses the breath, and that's the key, so it's the breath. But the breath, it starts out kind of choppy, and you can feel it, but after a while, the breath is going to get very, very soft, very short, very shallow. And that short, shallow breath, which is very normal and very natural when you let the breath just breathe, if you are not sort of well settled, that short, shallow breath will be too subtle for you to hold your attention. And so using something like the contact points of your feet on the floor or your bum in the chair, or using sound, that especially if you have a sound like we do here that has a continuous sound, that will probably be a stronger, more connectable object. So even just noticing that your body is sitting in the chair or sitting on the cushion when you have a very active mind is a much easier thing to stay connected to. And you can notice much more easier that you are not feeling in the chair. You can try it and see. So some of you are just used to the breath and your natural go-to is going to be the breath, and that's totally fine. I just want to help those of you who feel like I'm not connecting, just find something that is easily identifiable. So even in the midst of your daydreaming, you might notice here in the room here, the fan is going. And that sense of hearing that fan will help you come back to the present moment and let go of whatever thinking. And you just listen. And notice any other sounds. We happen to be lucky enough to have a whole bunch of sounds. Ticking clocks. Yeah.
Any suggestions about sleepiness?
I will repeat that one. I figured it was a pretty quick one. So there's a question about if there's any suggestions about sleepiness. So Yes, first let's understand what sleepiness is. So sleepiness, there's two kinds of sleepiness. One is I'm just tired. The other one is samadhi. Because samadhi, concentration, is very heavy and it's grounding. The samadhi training that we're training is right effort, which is putting some energy into it, right mindfulness, which is this upbeat curiosity, interest, it's like the uplift, and right concentration, samadhi, which is the grounding, settling, relaxing. In the room here, there's so much settling, grounding, that if you don't put your own personal interest in the moment, you will sit here and the body will get all relaxed. It'll be sleepy. But it's not really sleepiness. It is, I am too, I'm too relaxed, soft, chilled, and not enough interest. So we do want the soft, the kind of relaxed energy, but we also want to have this interest in. So there's always standing up. And I have found I am not going to stand up. I tried to stand up, but it's too embarrassing. I can't do it because it seems like as soon as I stand up, everybody thinks, she's sleepy, even though nobody is paying attention to me. That's exactly what I think. And so I'm not standing up. So another way to deal with the same thing without standing up, so nobody knows, is open your eyes. Because eyes bring light in, and when they bring the light in, it also brings a lot of energy. So if you open your eyes and you look down, I find that it still helps me get sleepy. So what I do is, whenever I go into a place, I find a spot across from me, and I look at it, and that's my spot. And so if I get sleepy, I'm going to open my eyes, and I'm going to look at that spot. So it's just like when we stand up, and we go into walking, and we try to hold the stillness. You try to hold the stillness of the stitch, but you just open your eyes. Look at your spot. Look at your spot, look at your spot, look at your spot. You might have to look at your spot the whole 20 minutes. Maybe you close your eyes. Maybe you start seeing you're getting sleepy again. Open your eyes. Look at the spot. But tell your mind, this is not sleepiness. This is concentration. So that you won't have this aversive relationship with this relaxed, settled place. And you can just know, all I have to do is bring this mindfulness in, this uplift of interest, and then you're balancing the cultivated stillness with this upbeat energy. And that balancing is what gets us in this state of samadhi. You see? So that's what we're so careful with the word sleepy. We call that sloth and torpor sleepy, but mostly it's low energy. And so we just need to bring the energy up with some mindfulness, light. You can stand up, but I think opening your eyes and just looking across from you is just going to be just as good. Okay. So is it okay to change your anchor? Yes, that's why I'm bringing up the second anchor here. I want you to try one anchor through the whole period and see how that works. And then if you still don't like it, we got two more periods. You can try one more, but eventually I think you're going to see it's the keeping your interest, whatever it is. So, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Hi, Sage. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now in terms of the breath. And I started thinking about a mantra. And, you know, we've been studying refuge and So in the breath, I was repeating, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and I was doing that over and over again as a mantra, and then it just kind of morphed down into refuge. You know, in the breath, I say refuge, you know. And I don't know if how you view that. It's almost like saying mantra rather than focusing as the anchor rather than focusing on the breath, because as soon as the mantra, the word, starts to drift away, I know I've lost my anchor. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I have used a mantra a lot. I think we don't, here in Theravada, we don't use mantras as much as we could. Here's the thing about a mantra, because you are thinking. And so if you let the words, if you let yourself be connected to the felt sense of the words, eventually those words are going to drop away, and you are staying with the felt sense of the experience here. Then you are connected to the mantra itself. But if it becomes just about you saying the words, now you're sitting there thinking with the words. Do you see the difference between the two, Sage?
You know, that old book, The Way of the Pilgrim, where the word becomes the heartbeat.
Yes.
You know, the mantra. I mean, I've done that where I've tried to do the many, many, many mantras, and I lose that.
But, right.
Because I had this huge desire to have that become a part of me, you know, part of my being. But this, just saying this word, it was pretty nice.
Yes.
And my intention would be that it would drift from just the word to the feeling.
That's right.
But I have to work with that.
That's right. I think that's fine. I think what you're doing is fine. You're using it just like sound. You're using it just like the breath, just like sensation. So I used to have a mantra because I was so afraid of closing my eyes that every time I would close my eyes, I'd have all this panic and anxiety, and I would just say this quietly, safe and protected, tucked inside, safe and protected, tucked inside. And that saying that eventually would soften, I'd be more relaxed, and I would be less and less and less anxious. So that mantra helped me through many difficult sits. But it's just making sure, like you say, that you are feeling into the felt sense of the words or word, not the saying, not making sure you say the word right. And so not this kind of convoluted intention that I'm going to be the best whenever I try to do something in my life. That long drawn out phrasing is not it. It's just something that captures the moment right here. And your one word sounds fine. That would be like your breath in and out.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.